south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. The other day I was with John Galt, and we were discussing how in some of the 20 Latin American countries, it's relatively easy to get temporary and permanent residency. While in others, it's slightly more difficult, there are more hoops to jump through, costs more money, and takes more time. Then there are those other handful of Latin countries who change the rules so often and make you go through so many hoops that it's almost impossible to get residency and a passport. The problem is, for each Latin country, regarding residency and passports and stuff, there is tons of conflicting information on the internet. Now, it shouldn't surprise you that it would be your Latin lawyer that would know all the steps that you need to go through. The problem is, if you don't talk to a Latin lawyer directly about your case, you could be spinning your wheels a long, long time and spend a lot of extra money. In fact, a number of times I found out myself that Latin embassies and their ambassadors and their office personnel have conflicting information on temporary and permanent residency too. And that's within their own departments. Their own chain of command sometimes doesn't seem to know the right hand from the left. That's what causes a lot of headaches for gringos and expats who try to do those things on their own. Sorry to say, you can't assume by looking at a Latin country's embassy website that the data there is absolutely correct. Oftentimes, a would-be expat will spend a lot of extra time and spend extra money trying to get certain documents authenticated and such that really weren't necessary. And vice versa. Many times a gringo would come down thinking all his paperwork is complete, only to be told that he needs another idiotic piece of documentation or a stamp or a seal from the home country. So bottom line, save the stress, the wailing, and the gnashing of teeth. Hook up with a Latin lawyer, at least to get the proper information. Get a list from that lawyer what you need to have right now. What was necessary 6 months ago is not necessarily what's necessary now. Latin lawyers know this stuff. They do residency applications all the time. And don't think you'll get the proper information by phoning up the nearest Latin consulate either. If you do that, you're guaranteed to get an answering machine. Not to mention, you should never put 100% faith in expats who give out information on the internet, even if it's coming from a blog from someone who went through residency, because chances are that person went through the process a long time ago, possibly years ago. And if that was the case, you can expect you'll have more hoops to jump through, more paperwork to file, more complications in general. In fact, our own John Galt, when he first came down to Central America, spent a few hundred extra bucks because he was given some bad information at one of the Latin consulates up in the States. So in his case, he ended up bringing too many authenticated and certified documents. So in the end, that cost him extra money. His was the somewhat rare case of being overprepared. So bottom line, expect misinformation and a few screw-ups along the line. I mean, let's face it, we're dealing with third-world Latin bureaucracies here. And you know, third-world bureaucracies are like first-world bureaucracies on Xanax. But it wasn't like that years ago when the paperwork was much simpler. You know, 2 decades ago when I first came down to Latin America, the residency rules, for example, when it came to Costa Rica and Colombia, hadn't changed for years. And now they're changing so fast, the embassies and consulates can't even keep up. Yeah, right, as if they ever could. So, all you goonabies and wannabes who are still on the fence, you've got to make your move. Do file for your permanent or temporary residency now, while you still have the chance. Since for the time being at least, some Latin residency programs are still easily obtainable. Though there's a lot of pressure coming down from the U.S. State Department to tighten up on those residency programs, so in 6 months or a year, all bets are off. By the way, I have a very interesting email here from a gringo living in Colombia, married to a Colombian woman. He's been there like 8 years now. His Colombian wife is college-educated and she works in a putrid government agency. In fact, my friend says almost everyone in Colombia wants to work for a government agency because they pay twice what the private sector pays. Same old, huh? Anyway, his wife says the trend at the immigration office in Colombia is to not only make things more complicated for permanent and temporary residency, but also to raise the fees dramatically. Wow, that's a big surprise. And she said the South American countries, the ones in the trade association called Mercosur, will all be doing the same thing. So expect things to become more complicated and more expensive. And that's especially true if you want to become a permanent or temporary resident in a South American country. But the good news is, with almost all Latin countries, once you've started the temporary or permanent residency process, you're grandfathered in no matter how many new rules and regs they slap on in the future. At least that's what immigration officials are saying, but who knows, right? So again, you've got to get that part of your plan B rolling. Now, speaking of Colombia, Yeah, I was. You have to hear this email. It hits on a lot of the subjects, including residency, and what so many people are interested in. What it's like for gringos doing business in Colombia. So pay attention to this one. There's a lot of great up-to-date information here. He starts by saying, "Hi, Johnny. This is Stu. Since you had some guy talking about Colombia on a recent show, I thought I'd add some more to the mix. Been living down in Medellin, Colombia for 7 or 8 years now, and things are really changing fast. Getting the proper legal visas to stay in the country and to get residency is getting harder and more complicated all the time. And you might want to know there are new and more complicated rules for people who want to buy or rent houses, property, and land. I'm referring to gringos and foreigners now. I'll get to that in a little while, but before I do, I want to tell you about doing business in Colombia as far as gringos and expats are concerned. Hell, Johnny, you wouldn't believe how expensive it's become to do business here in Colombia legally. It's night and day compared to what it was like 8 years ago when I first arrived. The business newspapers down here are now admitting that Colombia is the most expensive place in Latin America to do business. They also say the most dangerous place to open and run a business is not, as you might think, San Salvador or Honduras or Guatemala, but Brazil. Those same magazines and journals are saying that the cost to do business in Cali, Bogota, Medellin, Cartagena, etc., that would be all the big cities in Colombia. They're all on par with opening and operating businesses in Middle America. My advice for an expat who wants to open a business here in Colombia, do stick to an internet or IT business if at all possible. And here's another tip. Don't, if at all possible, register it legally with the government. There would be no need anyway if you had the kind of IT business you could do from the home. However, if your operation is big enough to need a business office, you'll have to register it or you'll get in trouble. And how would that happen? Well, usually it won't be the government that finds out. It'll be jealous neighbors or jealous local business people and competitors that'll report you to the Colombian version of the IRS. Then you'll be in some deep doo-doo. In fact, it happened to a friend of mine and they revoked his permanent residency. They slapped him with a huge fine, then put what they call an embargo on his passport, meaning he couldn't go out of the country until he paid the debt. I repeat, if at all possible, if you're going to do business, stick to an IT business and don't register it with the government. I know there's thousands of off-the-books IT companies in Colombia right now. I'd say 3/4 of all IT companies are not registered. So how do people get their money? How do they get paid? Better yet, how do they get away with it? The most common, simplest, and easiest way is to have your bank account where you receive your funds in another Latin country or have an account in an offshore Caribbean bank and you bill your clients from there. Johnny, most people think that the U.S. is the only country that taxes its citizens on its outside earned income. Well, guess what? Colombia does too. As of 2014, the law says if you're in Colombia more than 183 days out of any 365-day continuous cycle, you will be taxed on your worldwide income, just like in the U.S. And here, us expats have been trying to find ways to get around all of that BS. And alas, until just 2 years ago in Colombia, we had. And note, in Colombia, there's no exemptions to that rule, no matter what kind of visa you might hold. So if gringos, expats, and other foreigners are over that 183-day limit, you are taxed on that worldwide income, regardless of the reason why you're in Colombia. In fact, you could be a do-gooder preacher out in the Amazon saving souls, and you'll still have to pay taxes on any money that you make outside the country. So every year, or every quarter, or even every month, depending on what kind of business you have, you'll have to fill out all kinds of forms, hire a Spanish-speaking Colombian tax attorney, and sign over portions of your wealth that may have had nothing to do with doing business in Colombia. This is not a small issue. If you come to Colombia and don't plan on retiring, that is, you don't have a pension or Social Security and you have to work or plan on working, this will affect you. Not only that, if worldwide income taxation were not enough, a recent withholding tax law was passed where they take 33% of any transaction between a Colombian citizen or company, including all residents, and that could be you. The Colombian government will now withhold 33% of all money that comes into the country that's determined to come from a known tax haven, which includes, by the way, Panama. In fact, the word around here is that that law was specifically written to flush all that Colombian money out of Panama and bring it back to Colombia to be taxed. Now, we're not talking much about drug cartel or cocaine money here. Drug cartel bigwigs know how to move their money around the world internationally in a millisecond. They're not going to let the Colombian tax officials get their hands on it. We're talking mostly about money that's been stashed legitimately out of country, obtained through a legitimate business. And you might know that until about a year and a half ago, Panama had complete banking secrecy. But not anymore. Here's something people never talk about in those Promote Colombia blogs. When Americans land in Colombia for the first time and they see the huge building boom that's going on, they'll say, "Stuart, where's all that money coming from? Is that drug money?" Yes, some of it is, of course. However, surprisingly enough, it's been determined that most of that money, at least until a year or so ago, was flowing in from anonymous banking sources in Panama. Then finally, Stu says, "Johnny, if people are thinking of coming to Colombia for that better life, to have their plan B and all that, they should definitely be aware of these new tax laws and act accordingly." But that's not all. Americans who are in love with Colombia from a distance should be informed of what might be Colombia's worst tax of all. As of January 2015, Colombia instituted a wealth tax. As of now, the tax kicks in when you have assets worth $350,000 or more in country. No wonder smart Colombians keep their money in Panama. And there's another new tax called the CREE tax. In English, it translates to roughly the income equality tax. You know, Johnny, it pains me to even talk about this stuff. What amazes me and other gringo and American businessmen is how quickly the Colombian government was able to pull the red carpet out from under foreign investors. Sad to admit, but all these regressive tax changes came about when gringos started flooding in 5 or so years ago. And with that 183-day rule, expat businessmen I know still love the country, though they qualified by saying the country's only good for gringos 6 months a year. Though being this is Latin America, there are ways around paying those heavy taxes. For example, as said before, if you have an IT business and you don't have it registered and you have a bank account outside the country. You see, Johnny, I'm in the IT business myself, connected with internet offshore gaming. I'd even say 4 out of 5 IT businesses in Colombia are off the books. By now, your listeners must be wondering, if your bank is offshore, how do people pay their bills and expenses related to day-to-day life? With credit and debit cards. They use Visa, MasterCard, American Express, and a few of the others, including more and more popular Chinese bank-issued credit cards. By the way, those Chinese bank-issued credit cards work in most ATM machines, too, so you can withdraw cash at any time. So the question is, are moves and manipulations like that illegal? According to Colombian law, technically yes. Though according to moral and ethical law, no. At least that's the way tens of thousands of us overtaxed Colombian residents feel. On the same subject, understand that Brazil is on board with worldwide taxation too. So for now, it's the U.S., Colombia, Brazil, and a tiny country in Africa called Eritrea. They're the only 4 countries in the world that tax worldwide income. So if you live in Brazil as a resident, your personal tax rate is from 4 to 20%. If you have worldwide income, it's taxed at a rate of 15%. So if one of the reasons you left the States was to escape the oppressive tax regime, good luck if you ended up with your plan B in Colombia or Brazil. How did that happen anyway? How did Colombia, with its banana republic, mañana time tax system, just in the last 5 or 10 years, turn into a U.S. tax clone? Many of us expat Americans believe it's because Colombia is so attached to the U.S. financially and militarily. The proof is, right now, there are at least 3 U.S. military bases in Colombia, and surely many clandestine ones having to do with that all-important war on drugs. Walking through Medellin, I see U.S. military types all the time. The U.S. also has many agreements and treaties with Colombia, allowing them to send in more troops if necessary. I wonder, who determines when it's necessary? We always joke, but we shouldn't, that the Colombian government is just an arm of U.S. policy. Some Colombian journalists have suggested that fully 25% of Colombia's economy is due to the billions flooding in every year to fight that so-called drug war. That means the politicians and the bureaucracy and the entire country have been addicted to U.S. money flooding in for decades now. And Johnny, as far as South America, Chile is much the same except for the drug component. They have at least one U.S. base and the same agreements to give up their sovereign rights over to the USA in time of crisis or disaster. I'd like to know who determines that, wouldn't you? But I digress, though not as much as you, Johnny. As promised, now it's time to talk about gringos doing business in Colombia. You may have heard, if you speak a little Spanish and have a lawyer, you can open a business in Colombia in less than a month. But don't think, even if your Spanish is perfect, you can do all that without a lawyer. It's almost impossible. One word of warning. In the big cities like Medellin, they see gringos coming. Because it's no longer the local Colombians, but the gringos and Europeans who are trying to open businesses. So as Colombian businesses crash and burn and leave, gringos and Europeans flood in and try to create their own. Since few locals speak English well, many gringos and expats start businesses with Colombian partners. Having a Colombian partner is one way to prevent being charged gringo prices for everything, including legal help. Those of us who've been in various businesses in the States and here in Colombia know what it's like to have a business partner. Like you've said, Johnny, in a past show, you'll start out as best friends, but sooner or later, you'll want to poke him in the eye with the sharp end of a selfie stick or throw him in the dumpster at midnight. I've had two Latin business partners myself, and neither ended well. So, Johnny, in your last few shows, you've been talking about rules and regulations changing regarding temporary and permanent residency, as well as various types of work and tourist visas, too. In that regard, I know of some recent changes that have occurred in Colombia. To start off, there are three main types of visas available for foreigners in Colombia. First, the retirement visa. The amount to qualify has been slipping lower and lower over the past 2 years due to the Colombian peso's recent crash against the U.S. dollar. It's now around 3,000 to 1. So to qualify for that permanent retirement visa, you have to show a monthly income of $700 or more. That would be Social Security, annuity, a pension, or even rental coming from an outside source. Number two, they have what they call a business owner visa. For this visa, the paperwork's getting worse and crazier all the time. With the crash of the peso, the amount you need to invest is $80,000 in land or a business that's in your name. It could be a house or apartment or raw land, a rental, any fixed asset that produces income. However, with the bank's know your client laws strong and heavy down here too, you have to prove the legitimacy of all the funds that you ship into the country and prove you've paid taxes on them, which can't always be done, you know. So be prepared for some flies in the ointment, and the process can always stall too. That happens more often than you'd think. As far as entering and exiting the country on a simple tourist visa, U.S. citizens who are not also Colombian citizens are required to carry a U.S. passport and a return ticket, or they won't let you in the country. Okay, it's me, Johnny, here. Remember in the last show I talked about that website called www.flyahead.com? Well, this could be one of those cases where renting a ticket for 24 or 48 hours would be a very good deal. That's flyahead.com. Could save you a lot of money. Okay, back to our Colombian expat's email. He says U.S. citizens do not need a formal visa for a tourist business stay of 60 days or less, only their U.S. passport. However, stiff fines are imposed if passports are not stamped on arrival and/or if stays exceeding the 60-day period are not approved in advance by Colombian immigration authorities. Okay, listeners should pay attention to this part very carefully. What if you overstay your Colombia tourist visa? What kind of fines and penalties will be assessed? How about this for a government's arbitrary way of fining you? Well, first of all, you can get another 90-day extension, but as with all Latin American consulates and embassies now, you have to make an appointment online. In any event, if you overstayed your visa even for one day and you leave Colombia, you will face a fine. Here comes the unbelievable part. The fine is calculated arbitrarily and could range from one half to up to 7 times the minimum monthly salary of an average Colombian. In other words, between 350,000 Colombian pesos and 4.5 million Colombian pesos. And now, with the peso at around 3,000, that could be anywhere from $100 to $1,200. I mean, come on. Have you ever heard of such a thing? In other Latin countries, they fine you $1, $2, or even $5 a day if you overstay your time. But in Colombia, it's according to the average monthly Colombian salary. Really, what brainiac thought of that? In fact, a few months ago, one of my friends left the country and he was only late by a few days and he still paid the $100 fine, the minimum. That's the usual charge if you're over by 1 to 30 days. However, a lot of gringos, expats, and foreigners choose to stay a lot longer past their stay date because they know they would have paid the same fine anyway. Some, in fact, have overstayed their visas for many years, knowing no matter how long they overstay, they'll never pay more than an $1,100 or a $1,200 fine. Okay, there are other visas besides your regular tourist visa. There's various work visas, managerial visas, teaching and professional visas, as well as dozens and dozens of rules and exemptions. And here's something else people thinking of coming to Colombia have to know. You can almost never rent an apartment, a business, an office space without a Colombian co-signer. And because of this, there are rental and real estate agencies where someone does speak English. They have the usual suspects, Century 21, Remax, and local people too. And they'll help you do the deal. They'll be your co-signer, but they'll ask at least 6 months up front, plus a front and back end deposit. Of course, they're making a commission, and that's why they'll co-sign for you. They'll also require you to hand over a stack of personal debts and financial paperwork. Yep, I know. There goes your privacy. Say, Johnny, are you asleep? Have I lost you yet? Please bear with me. I know this is a long and rambling email, but I believe there's some important information here for people thinking of going to Colombia. Let me just state once again that Colombian taxes and the huge devaluation in the peso against the dollar in the last 2 years have been killing new business startups. Everyone on the net is talking about how cheap it is to visit Colombia from the States. Well, that might be true, but it's no fun to actually live or work here under those circumstances. And right now, Colombia has the highest Latin American taxes behind Brazil. Now, Johnny, I know the internet and the blogosphere has been filled with positive news about Colombia. That's why I'm writing this email, to set the record straight from someone who's had 8 years boots on the ground. And of course, the dollar to peso ratio has never been better in at least a dozen years. That's for people who have dollars, not pesos. So your dollar buying power is about 70% more than just a year or so ago, which means you could buy more property for less. That's what all the bloggers are saying anyway. However, in the gringo-wise living and shopping areas, real estate prices are rising so quickly as to offset much of that peso loss to the dollar. That's not to say there aren't some great bargains here. The dollar does go a long way, especially in food, restaurants, and traveling throughout the country. They've got some low prices now. However, us long-term expats with a lot of boots on the ground here know it won't last, since the U.S. dollar is fiat money too and will surely crash after elections. Down here in Colombia, no one really expects Trump to get in. Most gringos think that Bulldog Hillary will get in, and that will be the end of the strength of the U.S. dollar. The other day, in fact, I was in a conversation with a gringo who had a degree in mathematics and economics. And when I asked him why the U.S. dollar was so strong right now, he said, "I just think it's the nicest looking horse on the way to the glue factory." Anyway, Johnny, I thought I'd add a little counterbalance to all those positive blogs and expat retirement and newsletter articles. Yeah, I know. Everybody says it's going to be the next Costa Rica. Like you always say, Johnny, who wants to be the new Costa Rica anyway? Unfortunately, it's sad to see in the big cities of Colombia, it is looking just like Costa Rica. Gringo prices, big government, big taxes, big brother, and big fines if you don't stick to the letter of the law. My advice is the same as yours, Johnny. Come down and visit, get some boots on the ground, see for yourself. But recognize you'll be an unhappy camper if you have a business down here and you stay longer than 6 months a year. So that's it, Johnny. Just venting, I guess. Signing off from Colombia, Stu. Whoa, talk about marathon emails, Stu. Don't think I can add much to that one. Don't have to. Don't want to. Okay, let's downshift for a second. The other day, as luck would have it, I was driving down a road way out in the boonies, and who did I come across? Two tall blonde gringas sitting alongside the road, sucking on their plastic water bottles, sitting on their oversized backpacks, waiting to hitch a ride. They were Northern European backpackers. Turns out they were riding a chicken bus. The bus broke down. People disembarked, started walking every which way, looking for another chicken bus if it happened to pass by. Anyway, I gave him a ride to the Pan American Highway, dropped him off at a McDonald's. Where else? During that 10-minute ride, I lectured him softly about hitchhiking and other hazards. They didn't seem to absorb any of it. Of course, being Scandinavian, their English was good, and one of them said to me, "How come no one else ever told us we shouldn't ride chicken buses? Why, they're the backpacker's iron horse, don't you know?" So yes, they were a pair of backpacking, clueless Europeans. Broke, tired, bug-bit, hungry, and slightly stinky, but still on the defensive. One of them said if we don't stay at hostels and backpacker joints and ride chicken buses, we'd have never been able to come on this trip. To which I said, "Two blonde gringos like you hitchhiking out in the boonies, you're just asking for trouble. I wouldn't try that up in the States." And one of them said, "We have. Only got robbed once, outside New Jersey." So anyway, about a half hour later, what do you think I saw? The same two girls in the McDonald's parking lot getting picked up by a short, fat Latin guy with two bodyguards. They took off in a new, shiny black Suburban. I figured they were probably safe enough, but who knows? Bottom line, I don't recommend hitchhiking in Latin America. Or anywhere for that matter, except maybe where they come from. Iceland. Oh, and by the way, speaking of getting out on the open road, the other day I nearly got knocked over by a kid, a 1%er, in a high-end mall, riding one of those hoverboards. Power boards, whatever they're called. Yep, they're down here now. They're completely legal. Only spoiled, entitled rich kids have them. And they're crashing and burning and breaking their necks on them, too. So what else is new? I hear they're outlawing them up in the States. That said, here's another heads up on my January 2017 Expat Insider Seminar. Just go to www.thenewexpat.com. Click on Johnny's 2017 seminar link for complete information. Now's a great time to get all your ducks in a row on that Plan B. We're getting down to the wire. It might be your last chance to do so and still apply for a temporary or permanent residency in Guatemala. That's where we'll be holding the seminar again. Remember, Guatemala is one of the easiest countries in Latin America to obtain your permanent and temporary residency. But as mentioned in the email and my rant a few minutes ago, things are changing, so you've got to act now. Uncle Sam's putting a lot of pressure on foreign countries to make their residency programs harder and harder to get into. The Republicrats do not want the sheep to leave the barn. Let's see now. We've had the new seminar registration open for about a week, and we're already half full. So do get on board and reserve yourself a spot and get in on the early bird discount. And finally, do check out my YouTube channel. You'll find it's more fun, more organized, and, well, better all the time. And for those of you who want me to help you with a particular aspect of your Plan B, just email me and we can set up a phone or a Skype consult. Of course, those aren't free, but if you come down to my January 2017 seminar, you will get a refund on the phone consult.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.